Game on 2FM.
With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks, as always, to Jenny Green. It's Thursday, the 19th of August, and this is Game On. Coming up on the show, Shamrock Rovers and Flora Tallinn have just started their second half. Paul Corry and Tony O'Donoghue will be watching that one for us. We'll continue our build-up to the All-Ireland Hurling Final. Niall Moran will provide the Limerick view. Tom Kenny has the Cork one. Jeff Shepherd has his eyes on all things American sport, and we'll also chat to Ireland hockey coach Mark Tumulty. If you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
We are going to get straight in to the football. Shamrock Rovers and Flora Tallinn, as I mentioned, have started their second half. Paul Corry is with us live in studio. Paul, how are things shaping up?
Yeah, it's currently 2-1, like you mentioned, Marie, and we've just gone into the second half. And it's probably not what I expected tonight. I probably expected that it was going to be a cagey affair and the two teams kind of feeling each other out and seeing where they were at with things. But it was a super open first half. And I guess if you were Stephen Bradley, probably a little disappointed with how things have gone so far. I thought in the last couple of weeks they've looked really solid. They've had that real solid foundation with their back five, and they went through in the last tie without conceding a goal, and they looked at sixes and sevens at times in the first half, which is very uncharacteristic. Both goals was a case of getting in behind that back three that Rovers rely on, and I thought just even an uncharacteristic error from Joey O'Brien going to ground has kind of freed them up. And they were two good finishes, and Flora are a good side. But I think Bradley would have been probably disappointed with how the first half went by and large. Now, they got back into it. Graham Burke, superb finish from the edge of the box following a corner, has put them right back in the tie. And it's still early doors, but if you were a Shamrock Rovers fan and if you were a member of that squad right now, you'd want to see things tightened up because they can't afford to concede too many more goals.
Tony O'Donoghue is with us as well. Tony, it's a Europa Conference League playoff first leg. We're still kind of getting to grips with this new competition, but was there a little bit of maybe expectation that this would be an easy game for Shamrock Rovers?
Well, I wouldn't say easy. Yesterday in his press conference, Stephen Bradley said that Flora Tallinn are the best side that they would have played so far. And remember that they were narrowly knocked out of the Champions League qualifier against Slovan Bratislava, who looked like a decent side. But Rovers have been in good form. Paul saying there that it's a very open game, he sounded like he was enjoying that. It's too blooming open, it has to be said, from a Rovers point of view, because they've been cut open in that first half. And I think a very significant factor, really, Lee Grace, unfortunately missing this game. Sean Hoare came in for him, and I think his absence has been felt. It has meant a reshuffle in the defence, Sean Hoare coming in. And it's down that inside right channel for Flora Tallinn that they've, that second goal in particular, that they've found some luck. So more than luck, really. I mean, the goals, unfortunately, were self-inflicted from a Rovers point of view, and they've been good defensively recently, so that is a problem for them. But Graham Burke's brilliant strike just before halftime has changed the complexion of the team talk, you would have imagined, at halftime as well. It's funny that the second half Rovers have started well as they did the first. I mean, Flora couldn't get out of their half for the early part of the first half, but unfortunately it's 2-1 at the moment to Flora. You're hoping that Rovers can get this game back to parity, but they're going to have to change the tactic, I think.
Paul, I guess one of the issues that has surrounded this Rovers team for quite a while, more so domestically maybe than in the European stage, was the fact that they do start a little bit slow. They more often than not wait till the very end of the game to get their goals, and that might be okay here at home, but in Europe they get punished for that.
Yeah, and I guess when you look at their league form and even the European campaigns that they've had, you've kind of seen two different sides. And early on in the season they were relying on a lot of late goals, and at times they flattered to deceive with their performances. I didn't think they played very well early on in the season, but in the last couple of weeks, as the senior players like your Ronan Finns and Joey O'Brien's and even Dylan Watts come back into the team, they've looked more comfortable in games and they've controlled the tempo of games, and that was evident even the second leg, like Tony mentioned, against Slovan Bratislava, and in their last tie against the Albanian side, they looked really, really comfortable and they were methodical in their build-up and they were creating a lot of chances. And those glimpses in the first half when they were getting in behind and they looked to be stretched and to be chasing the game a bit, kind of reminded me a bit in the first half of the season of being overly exposed. So they should be confident. They've been good in the last number of weeks. You're hoping that they can kind of put that rhythm back into their game and control the tempo and just shore up at the back. And they should be okay, but they you know, they've shown in the last number of weeks they can create chances and they can score goals. Rory Gaffney is bang in form, so I wouldn't be too worried that you know, that they will need to rely on late goals or whatever that might be. If they play well, they should have enough to at least be in this tie.
Tony, you spoke to Ronan Finn yesterday ahead of this game, and he mentioned the fact that experience is going to be so important now. They're going to have to draw on all of it that they have, and it definitely looks like they're going to have to do that out there tonight, because they were going to want to bring something home for next Thursday.
Absolutely, they will. But they have forced a corner, so we'll keep an eye on that as we talk to you. But there's a flip side of experience as well. Like, the likes of Joey O'Brien has been superb for Shamrock Rovers, but he's been having a tough game today. For the first goal, he was the one who gave the ball away, trying to play the ball out from the back. And then he was putting his backside for the second goal, and he's also on a yellow card now. So that's something that they're going to have to watch very carefully indeed. That corner cleared by Flora Tallon out as far as Richie Towell. And he ballooned it back into the area, but over the target. So that has come to nothing. Look, it's 2-1, and as you've been saying, they have been good finishers. They have managed to finish off games very well. There's no question about their fitness. There's no issue tonight either about heat. It's a very Irish sort of evening in Tallinn. It's the Estonian champions up against the Irish champions, and Shamrock Rovers making a substitution now. Rory Gaffney, who has been in great form, is now being replaced by Aaron Green. Now you'll expect a lot of running from Aaron Green, and hopefully that'll help them in creating some chances. You'd have to say as well, it was perhaps a bit of a surprise that Danny Mandroyou didn't start this game. He's another one that they can maybe spring from the bench a little bit later on, but for the moment, Green coming on in place of Rory Gaffney.
Look, we know, Paul, that what kind of player Aaron Green is and how much of a pro he is, but he's on form a little bit as well. I think he scored only in the last few days.
Yeah, he did. He scored up in Drogheda when they won 1-0. It surprised me. I probably would have expected maybe Danny Mandroyou to come off the bench, like Tony has mentioned there, just because he's such a technical player, and in Europe you tend to rely on those technical players to retain the ball for you. Just looking at Flora going through, unbelievable save from Alan Manis. Like, that's a huge moment there. Flora just got in 1-on-1 and he's produced a massive save, because if that goes to 3-1, you're really chasing the tie. And I don't know, like,
and Paul, what happened there is exactly what you said shouldn't happen, that they shouldn't be left so open at the back. So the lessons haven't been learned from the first half.
Yeah, like, that's, listen, it's hard to be critical. Players have been so consistent for Shamrock Rovers the last number of weeks and months, but Pico Lopez has completely fluffed his lines there. He's actually missed the ball and they've gone through on 1-on-1, and you just can't afford to keep coughing up these chances, because they will take them at some point. But Alan Manis has given them a lifeline there of staying in the game. But
it's probably the shakiest I've seen that Rovers back three. O'Brien is having a poor game, Lopez there, and Sean Hoare doesn't look on top of his game either. Scales and Finn, the wing backs, need to probably come in and protect them a bit more.
Is it down to the fact that Lee Grace is missing?
He's very important to them. He really has, and I think he's played every game in Europe. So he, I'm certain, would have been a starter had he been fit. Yeah, and it has disrupted them a little bit, certainly. Luckily, because that corner has come to nothing for Flora.
Paul, a lot of what Shamrock Rovers have been about over the last couple of seasons, when they've started to build that consistency under Stephen Bradley, has been that platform from the defence.
Yeah, it is. And listen, when you're a possession-based team, you do need to press high up the pitch, and you want your back five or your three centre-halves to be positioning in and around that halfway line. And what that does leave you is exposed in behind for that long ball. And you're seeing tonight that they're actually getting caught out quite a bit with that. But listen, 2-1 wouldn't be a bad result to bring back to Dublin. You just need to make sure that you stay in the game now and don't concede any more chances like they have done, and then hope that you can nick one and stay in the tie. But what they can't afford to do is come back to Tala needing to win the game by 2 goals, because that would be a massive bridge to have to gap.
And look, I think as well, when we're talking about the experienced players there, and we saw that save that Alan Mann has just made, Tony, as well, you know, he's been so important to them for the last while, and by the looks of it, tonight more so than ever in the next few minutes as well.
He was there 10 years ago when they came through against Flora Tallinn. It was 0-0 in Estonia and 1-0 in Tala, and that was the beginning. That helped them on the way to the breakthrough, of course, that they were the first Irish team to make it to the group stages under Michael O'Neill. And yeah, Manis has proven his worth time and time again, and age is no barrier for him, certainly. And they'll need him to stay as alert until the end of this game. We're in the 58th minute, and Flora again cutting through very, very easily. A great chance here. Oh, and Manus was out. He didn't have to block it. It fired over in the end. Again, I think that's Sapanen, Flora Tallinn, one of their danger men. Vasilev has been very dangerous for them as well. Yeah, they're a quality side. And certainly, they've proven that this evening.
They really are. But look, a positive as well. Look, if they can, even if it stays like this, Paul, they are coming back to Tallaght Stadium. There's going to be 3,500 fans there as well. And no doubt they will really, really make a difference on the night.
Yeah, they will. And they have to stay in the tie tonight. And they need to be careful that they're in danger of actually conceding again. Personally, I'm just looking at the bench here, Maria. I think Chris McCann would be a wise change at this moment in time, even for Dylan Watts or Richie Tell, somebody who's a bit more disciplined, who can sit in beside Gary O'Neill, because they're getting cut to shreds in the middle of the pitch and then down through the sides of Sean Hoare and Joey O'Brien. And they need to protect the result as it is at 2-1 at the moment, because as you said, if they can bring that back to Tallaght next week, they'll be in with their chance.
Okay, well, it is heading for the hour mark in Estonia, and Shamrock Rovers are trailing Flora Tallaght 2-1. Tony O'Donoghue, thank you so much. Paul, stay with us as well. We're going to take a very quick break. 2FM.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now it is time to continue our build-up to the All-Ireland Hurling Final between Limerick and Cork. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined on the line by Cork's Tom Kenny and Limerick's Niall Moore. And Tom, I'm going to start with you, because there is a not-so-quiet hurling revolution going on in Cork. We saw the under-20s last night with a very impressive victory over Galway. But everyone is curious about what has been happening in Cork for the last number of years to get to this stage where you are starting to dominate at all age groups.
Hi, Marie, how are you? I suppose not too different to a lot of counties across Munster, especially in that, you know, the development squads and the tournaments at under 14, 15 and 16, those panel of players at under 20 and minor have come through a lot of those development squads. I suppose, fortunately, a lot of those players that came together were very good players, and there were two or three special bunches kind of from, I suppose, in 2014-15, kind of under 14-15 team, and again in 16 and under 15 team, they were very good teams. So they've just kept together the whole way through. A lot of work has been done in Noel Forlan, who's over the minors, was involved in development squads and Rebel Oak squads over the last number of years. So he'd know a lot of those players at minor level. And I suppose Don Lomani as well, being a school principal, would know, or a school deputy principal, sorry, would know a lot of the players coming through secondary school and Christians and these things as well. So he would have had his finger on the pulse in terms of those players. But I suppose in terms of work done, not much different to other counties, because I know Limerick themselves had an academy, you know, over the last number of years as well. And I suppose fortunately it's just the quality of players that have come in together probably has been better than previous years, and they've just stuck together and pieces are falling into place at minor and under 20 level now, I suppose, you know. And I suppose from a Cork point of view, it's great to see, given that we hadn't won a minor since 2000, sorry, and then 21 since 98. So look, from that perspective, it's long overdue. I suppose not many people would like to see a lot of Cork teams up in lights at the one time, you know.
That's for sure. And Tom, do you like, everybody knows the value of joined up thinking, but that doesn't mean, though, that it happens in many counties. Is there a little bit more, though, to what's going on in Cork? Like, is there a philosophy now that you're building on, that you're working towards, that you're trying to get all of the Cork underage teams to maybe mirror what is going on at senior level as well?
I wouldn't say from a hurling style, Marie, but probably from physical development and kind of athletic development. Aidan O'Connell is inside in Aki Keeve now in a role, I think it's high performance director, I'm not quite sure of his title, but he'd have a lot of joined up thinking for those squads coming through. Now I know there's probably a body of evidence that players at 14, 15, 16 probably shouldn't be doing a lot of that development work in gyms and things like that, but I think there's a lot of emphasis on kind of, you know, stretching and not just going out training, practicing the skills of the game, you know, that body and physical development nowadays is very important if a player wants to progress, I suppose, onto an inter-county, senior inter-county team. And probably that perspective, there is a lot of joint-up thinking. And I suppose, and I might say the same when we were growing up, it was a case of you go in and you do your camps and you do your squads and the skills and things, and there probably wasn't that much emphasis on getting your body physically right for the demands of later years, you know. And that's probably coming true now when you see those players, they're very well conditioned, they're just surviving a lot of games in a short period of time. That's probably standing to them. And plus, look, the knowledge on the sideline. As I said, you'd know Farland with the minors, Pat Ryan, Wayne Sherlock and many more with the under-20s. So there's a lot of knowledge there, and that's helping them come along at the same time, you know.
Yeah, Niall, I suppose, look, you have to tip your hat to them because they are bearing the fruits of their labour now. And at the same time as well, like, while it might be a little bit frightening to see Cork Hurling doing so well, like, they're showing what can be done if you start putting the efforts in at underage level. I know Limerick have been doing it for quite a while, but not all counties are doing it.
Yeah, but I suppose not all counties might have the resources or might have the population that like the Limerick and Cork have had. Like, I know in Limerick's case, we've probably turned from a dysfunctional county in some regards, maybe going back over a decade ago to, you know, a county that people are aspiring to. And I think something similar happened in Cork, albeit Cork are a county with probably far greater tradition. I suppose they just look to go 16 years without an All-Ireland. And look, they had their troubles there. They had the strikes. I suppose those things, they leave a little bit of a scar. We've had something similar in Limerick. But it probably comes to a stage where all the good people, again, they just mobilise, they put those things behind them. And again, it's probably no different to Cork. I think Limerick were just very fortunate that they had a couple of really, really good groups because, do you know what I mean, there is a lot of counties that have academies every bit as good and better than the Corks and Limericks of this world, but they may not just have the kind of resources. Even looking at a county like Roscommon, like, their counties have been ahead in that regard for a long time. So, look, it's frightening from a Limerick perspective and any
and
all the other counties
in
Munster. And a clear one, yeah, because, look, the reality of it was, and I probably see it firsthand, maybe at schools level and that, like, Cork should have been winning a lot of those titles, Hearties, maybe Dean Rains, even Munster Minors. They probably should have been winning them a lot sooner, and it just found it a lot harder than Cork traditionally would have found to get over the line. But it's like everything, when the tap starts dripping, you can overflow, and let's hope for all our sakes, especially Limerick and Clare, that it doesn't overflow just yet.
Tom, we had Declan Kelly, the Offaly under-20 manager, on Tuesday, and he made some really interesting points about development and how the main job for him, or, you know, almost the barometer for success for him, it wasn't just all about winning, it was developing players, bringing them through, trying to get some players from those underage groups to feed them into the senior setup. And, you know, you look at some of the players, and, you know, you look at them last night, we look at them again on Saturday night in the minor game, and that Offaly under-20 game against Roscommon, and you can almost be led to believe that they can turn into senior players overnight, but it's not as easy as that.
No, it's not, Marie, and I suppose it's a key component to that as well. You know, you can be successful at minor, you can be successful at under-20, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to progress into success at senior level. You know, I know I've mentioned it before, but you take the Kerry minor teams from, I think it was 2014 to 2018, where they won 5 minor All-Irelands collectively in a row, but those players that went through the under-20 grade, I believe, haven't actually won success at under-20 grade then, you know. So, while you can get a lot of players coming through, I think it's important that you have the right people on the sidelines as well to identify, to say, okay, look, player X there, he might be a fantastic player and, you know, shoot the lights out in a game. It's actually player Y we're looking for to complement what's happening in the senior team at present, you know. And that's not to dissuade the other player then that this is the end of the line for you, you know. That whether you're successful at minor or under 20 or not, that you still have to progress onto senior, you still develop, and I suppose it's not until you actually stop playing that you can look back and say, yeah, look, I had a successful career, or maybe things didn't go my way, that you can't really stop and think straight away. You know, if we say for Castino last night, that they can't say that this is their Everest, you know, that they have to say, okay, we've won an under 20, but that's history today, you know, the next game is Saturday, or my next club game is next week, and that's my next progression that I need to develop to, you know. But it's important, as you say, that players need to be developed not just for the short-term gain of success at underage level, but for long-term to feed into senior teams and to progress from there, you know.
Yeah, just steps on the ladder. Right, let us talk about that big senior game at the weekend, Limerick versus Cork in the battle for the Liam McCarthy. Niall, a lot of people are talking about this game, they're focusing on the fact that Cork are really good, and they're, you know, they're highlighting their speed and their game plan and, you know, the great players that they have and the Corkness. But when they're asked to predict who's going to win, they tend to go from Limerick after building Cork up. Just from a Limerick perspective, how does that make you feel hearing that no matter what, even though people can make a case for Cork, they still think Limerick are going to win?
I suppose, look, it's the signs maybe on where we're at, but like, we have to be realistic here. The people who are passing those judgments aren't the important people in the equation. And I know from Limerick's perspective, like, it is, and again, it's cliched, but it has been game on game. And I think you see that in their performances. Like, even you break down their games, you break them into quarters, like, they're hitting their key targets, like, their performance indicators are there the whole time. And while some of us might look and say, well, Limerick won by, they outscored Tip by 12 points in the third quarter of that Munster final, the Limerick group themselves might have said, well, we outhooked them maybe 3-1 and we outblocked them 4-1 and we won our breaks. Like, that's, I suppose, they're breaking things down into a lot of mini goals. And I suppose, look, the major result at the end of it is that all those little mini wins, they add up to being successful at the end of it. But from a Limerick perspective, like, you know, everybody is well aware of the challenge ahead of them. And I suppose in some of the language that's been used, it's a case of, well, how are Cork going to beat Limerick? Well, I think in Limerick's case, it's how are we going to beat Cork? And there's probably going to be elements of it. I think Patrick Collins is going to be put under severe pressure on Sunday. I really think they're going to target it from number one, especially on puckouts. And I know Limerick will be focused really on pressurising Cork, not allowing them to settle. And do you know what I mean? Instead, hitting some of those performance indicators as they go.
And what about you, Tom? Like, are you confident heading into this game? Just like, when you look at Limerick's form, what they're capable of, their past performances, the 15 that they can put out, their bench, and just everything that goes with this Limerick era now, as it's been described.
Well, I suppose we wouldn't be Cork people if we weren't confident.
That's true.
But, know. No, but I suppose, like, a lot of the discussion and areas are on Limerick's strength of being physical and Cork's strength is of being speed and able to hurl. And but a lot of it is missed in the sense, and Niall touched on it there, that Limerick are able to hurl as well. That can't be denied, you know, that when it becomes a game of hurling, they can play hurling too, and they have all the skill set to get through a game of hurling from that sense. I think from a Cork perspective, they'll obviously want to keep it open and keep it spacious and not play into the challenge of beating the physical power of the Limerick players. And I think the Limerick players, by contrast, then would want to keep it close and confined, and because they know subconsciously, they know in their own minds, they know straight up that we've got the power to beat Cork if this becomes a game where we need to use our physical strength and plow through them like they did against Waterford in the first half of the semi-final. You know, okay, Waterford tried to put it up to them for the first quarter, but by half time, and it's no disrespect to anybody, you know, Limerick had the game won, really. It was a case of just keeping water for the arms length for the second half. And I think that's what Cork need to avoid, that if Cork can get to 50, 52, 55 minutes with their noses in front, it might start asking questions of Limerick. But if it's the other way around, if Limerick are 2-3 points ahead coming down the home stretch, then I think it would be very difficult for Cork to try and chase that down, given the experience and the know-how that this group of players have at senior level and intermediate level with John Coyley, and at minor level as well.
Now, when you think of it heading into this game, there are two teams that are probably going to approach it differently. And with that in mind, how do you think it's going to play out then?
Yeah, it's just interesting to hear Tom kind of pass those judgments from our ear, and even times when it would have marked Tom myself, we would often went down against Cork, who would have been overriding on Ireland champions at the time. And do you know what I mean? You'd have been predicted to be maybe 5-6 points behind them, but there's always a chance. Like, there's always a curveball that can be thrown on the day. Do you know what I mean? Like, and if there's anybody, like, the Cork management are well capable of throwing curveballs, especially Donal O'Grady. So again, you know, we would be very, very wary of the challenges that are coming, and there'll be new challenges that'll be coming as well off Cork. But look, ultimately, Marie, I think for Limerick, you need to tie down some of the Cork totems, and that's kind of starts from Patrick Collins, Mark Coleman, and Hoggy up front. Like, Hoggy is really a leader. He settled him into the game against Kilkenny, and in the last couple of games this year against Limerick, he's kind of been, the last game he didn't get a score, and the league game he only got a point. So Limerick really need to be conscious of kind of tying those lads down. But I honestly think that, and I know it's been cliched again, that this is probably a year too soon for that Cork team, and I do probably think it is. I think this Limerick team realises the privileged position that they're in, that the stars are kind of in line in terms of the people, the background staff, everything else. And I really think we need to make hay while the sun shines, and I think we will on Sunday.
Tom, with hearing Niall talk about that as well, and look, it is kind of the narrative going into the game that it is a little bit too soon for this Cork team. But, you know, you mentioned the confidence, and hearing that as well will almost suit Cork heading into this game.
Yeah, I suppose historically, look, Cork went up in 66 with a very young team and won Northern Ireland in 1990. They were no hopers at the start of the year, from going from a terrible season in 89 to going on to win the All-Ireland. So from that point of view, I don't think the players themselves will look at that and see it as a case of this is a year too soon. You know, from looking out the outside in, you could argue that is the case, right, that Limerick have been down this road for the last number of seasons now. They're well more developed. Cork players are still a work in progress, many of them, you could say, you know. Did a lot of personnel change from last year. At the end of this year, they might have a few more personnel changes. And look, they'll have done a successful under-20 team to come into that setup. But at the same time, I think it's going to be very intriguing, because you have Limerick going for 3 titles in 4 years. They'll join a couple of famous names from back in the 30s and 40s and winning 3 All-Irelands. You have Patrick Horgan from Cork, who's no All-Ireland medal. Will want to, I don't know whether he'll retire this year or not next year, but a lot of the younger lads would say, look, Patrick Horgan probably carried Cork in the way for the last number of years, and they'd like to get him over the line. So there'll be a lot of intrigue and a lot of emotion in place. I'd probably tend to agree with Niall in that Limerick are further down the road. They have a supreme backup team. John Coyley seems like a very able man, very well spoken, and knows what needs to be said and when he needs to say it. If I was to put my head on the block, I'd say, look, from it being purely rational thinking, Limerick, from my heart, I'd say Cork. But it depends who has the nose in front, I believe, maybe at 60, 62 minutes, going down into the 78th minute.
Yeah, OK, well, stay with us for 1 second, because there has been a goal in Estonia.
Yeah, it's 3-1, Marie, unfortunately, to Flora Tallinn. It's probably been coming in the last 5 minutes. I think Shamrock Rovers started to look stretched again, but it was a shot from the edge of the box. It was one that Manus would have collected easily. Joey O'Brien has stuck his foot out, and it's fallen to a Flora player in the edge of the box. He's had a strike. Manus has parried it, and it was a simple tap in then for the Flora striker. But I guess the goal probably sums things up. I think Shamrock Rovers has been second best to a lot of the balls that have broken loose. They've been tidy in possession, Shamrock Rovers, but haven't threatened enough, and Flora Tallinn have looked more threatening in the final third, and they've scored again. So it's going to be difficult from here now.
Really well. Okay, we'll be keeping an eye on that for the remainder of the game. We're going to go back now to Tom Kenny and Niall Moore. And look, Niall, one thing that we always look at heading into games like this is the key matchups and where the game is going to be won and lost. For you, where are the areas do you think that both teams will be focusing on?
Well, I suppose from a Cork point of view, they'll be keen on trying to open up their full forward line again. Probably keen on maybe getting Hoggy freed up. I know the last day Richie English was in when he's on. Richie's not there today. So, like, again, Marie, I suppose traditionally we would have said about matchups, but really, again, the way the modern game has gone, I don't think that, especially in Cork's case, I think you could see a couple of curveballs thrown, in the sense that Jack O'Connor, he had a fine game when he went out half forward. Could Jack O'Connor find himself on Declan Hannan? Could Patrick Horgan find himself on Declan Hannan, trying to move Limerick, trying to disjoint them? So, look, in terms of matchups like Aaron Gillan, Sean O'Donoghue, like, that could be a major matchup again. Aaron Gillan's a marquee forward for Limerick. It'd be interesting to see how Peter Casey responds. Do you know what I mean? He'd been in superb form up to Waterford game, and even threw it out that game. He's been through probably a tumultuous week or two. So, look, again, it's probably in terms of how Cork are probably going to throw a little bit of a curveball. I think we know what Limerick is going to come with, and it's how Cork are going to throw a curveball. Might they follow what Tipperary did and just maybe load some of the puck outs and hope for a break, and that if they can get on a break, that they have the pace to exploit Limerick and create goal chances. I know in the league fixture, more so than the Championship, they created 4. Super goal chances, took 2 of them. So if they create 4 and get 4 on Sunday, then, you know, all bets are off. But look, again, it's hard to know where Cork are going to come with the plan, but they definitely will come with something to throw Limerick.
That's for sure. Tom, will they score goals, do you think?
Well, what was very evident in the semi-final was you could clearly see that that's what they were training to do all year, that there was a couple, okay, Jack kind of hit the post and got a great goal. There's two or three other occasions where they were nearly forcing a goal chance when the option was a point, and that's probably something they just need to identify in the game, that, okay, look, yeah, we need to go for goals, and goals are probably going to win us a game against Limerick. If we don't get them, we probably won't win. But they'll need to identify, having such a good defence, having a good goalkeeper, Nicky Quaid, that if a goal chance is none, then at least come away with the minimum, you know?
Yeah, it's all about trying to make the right decision in the moment. On the big stage, though, Tom Kenny, as you know, it's easier said than done.
Oh, definitely. Look, it's easy for us to sit here and talk about what's going to happen, and, you know, I suppose if the Cork Miners win on Saturday night, conversely, there's going to be fierce pressure on the seniors to win in All-Ireland because, as I said, all of Cork could be talking about winning this treble or whatever it is, you know. But as I said, look, heart says Limerick, or head says Limerick, heart says Cork.
No, I'm not going to ask you to predict who you think is going to win, because I know you're going to be going for Limerick. But do you think we're going to get a classic?
I hope we are, Marie. I hope we are. And that's just Tom. It's kind of funny to hear Tom talking about tradition. Like, we've had a fairly rough experience. Cork, we had 92. Tomás Small took about 20 steps to score a goal in the Munster final. I remember Tom was playing in 0-4. Brian Corcoran came on and scored a point.
Got his knees.
45 yards. So just, I hope we don't have any of those magical moments, Marie. And look, as long as the result goes in the right way, we'll leave Cork. The Rebel Rising can hold off for another couple of years.
Yeah, from a pure neutral point of view, it'd be great to see that rivalry reignited as well. Tom Kenny and Niall Moran, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break.
FM. Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food, packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. There is just under 10 minutes left in Shamrock Rovers game against Flora Tallinn. They currently trail 3-1. Paul, it hasn't really got any better for them.
No, it hasn't, but I guess a key moment to point out, Marie, is probably 60 seconds after Flora scored, Danny Manju hit the post with a left-footed strike, which was very unlucky because he had the keeper beaten. But the game is so open. We spoke about the first half being open. The second half has kind of continued that trend. And My main worry is that Flora looked like they could probably go and score again, and that would completely end the tie. But chances at both ends, and Shamrock Rovers and Stephen Bradley be really disappointed because it hasn't been one of their better performances.
I saw Stephen Bradley flash up on the screen there. He looked really, really frustrated, because when you think about where they were at half time, they had gone 2-0 down, they'd pulled one back. They knew exactly what was going wrong for them, but they weren't able to fix it.
No, and the mistakes have been there. The mistakes have been evident, particularly from the back five that they usually rely on so heavily. And even Alan Manis for the third goal, Marie, like he pulled off an incredible save earlier on in the match. But the parry, like, he's got to just touch it around the post or keep it away from danger. And he's dropped it to the striker, who's bang in form. And that goal probably typifies the performance. They've been sluggish and they've made mistakes in the boxes, and they haven't been clinical enough at the other end. So listen, Flora are good, but they're not world beaters. And if Rovers were to go out at this stage, it's a chance and it's an opportunity that they'll be really disappointed in themselves, because they haven't played well tonight.
Well, at least they still have an opportunity back in Tala next week if this doesn't improve any bit. Right, we are going to turn our attention now to hockey. The Ireland men's team are in European action, and I'm delighted to be joined by their head coach, Mark Tumulty. Mark, first of all, look, it's a big competition to be in, because you haven't been playing much in the last while because of COVID and everything that went with that. What are your aims for this competition?
The goal was to ensure that we qualified for the World Cup qualifying spot in October in Wales. So thankfully we achieved that by reaching the semi-finals on Wednesday. And then it's obviously then to see what we can achieve over the next 2 days in the semi-final and hopefully progress to the final. That has implications for European qualification next year and also world ranking points, which can affect us further down the line for Olympic qualification.
So it's been November 2019 since you were last in international action. How difficult has it been for you with everything that has came with COVID?
Yeah, to be totally honest, it worked out okay for ourselves, because we were allowed to train as elite sports. So we probably didn't have as many competitive games as we would have liked. But in build up to the tournament, we've been lucky enough to play, funny we play Scotland tomorrow, we played them six times, and we got some games against GB before they went to the Olympics. And then we were lucky to play them in development pal just before we came over to Poland. So we were lucky probably to get 12 or 13 games just in the build-up to it. So our preparation has been good. It's also been good that we've been able to work with a lot of guys back home in Ireland and give a lot more guys exposure to high-performance hockey and international hockey.
That's really interesting to hear you say that, because there has been quite a number of sports and people who've actually benefited from the break or found ways to make it work for them, where they've been able to make the improvements, the adjustments, the developments that they needed.
Yeah, we've been lucky enough, and probably because there was no club hockey, we became a bit of a club Ireland. So having exposure to the guys, on the players on a Tuesday and Thursday night in their regional sessions, and then being able to bring them together on a Saturday or Sunday for national sessions was probably something we'll never get to do again. So there was definitely benefits in that. As I said, good to be able to give younger players exposure to that environment. So it was definitely positive during the period where it was difficult not to have international games. There's still plenty of positives for ourselves.
Yeah, it seems like that, just given the performances that you've put in these capped internationals as well. It does seem like that you've had a real consistent tournament so far.
Yes, I've been pleased with how the team's performed. It's a difficult one, the B division, because you can't really get a lot of video of the teams that you're playing, so it's very much unknown, and also COVID probably hasn't helped with that either, to just get knowledge of the other teams. It's also difficult because the playing styles are not something we're used to, and I think on top of that as well was just how young our own squad was, because I think we had 7 guys receive their first caps in the first game against Poland, and we had a few other guys under 10 caps, which are very young and inexperienced side, and I think any side that comes to the B division does find it a difficult tournament to get what they want out of it. So I've been delighted with how we performed. The reaction yesterday to the Italy game was very positive. I was disappointed with the performance against Italy for many reasons, but I'm glad we got a response yesterday, and hopefully we can kick on tomorrow against Scotland in the semi-final.
6 new caps is a lot, and you know, when you hear about teams transitioning, and you look at a team like yours, to bring 6 new players in at this level is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's something we needed to do. I think the group that have been involved in Rio and then gone to the World Cup in 2018, a lot of the guys have retired from then or were unavailable due to various reasons, and we have other guys unavailable due to various reasons, work commitments and stuff like that, a bit of COVID. So it's probably something we were forced to look at, but it's good as well because we can shape those guys into the style of player that we want to have, and I think it's where sport's going now at the highest level. It is younger players that are coming through, so I'm delighted to see them being involved. As I said, I don't think we could have asked any more from younger players in the first 3 games in the tournament. I think that their confidence definitely is growing. I would expect them to influence the game again tomorrow.
One player that stands out is Ian Stewart, somebody that we probably wouldn't have heard a huge amount of before, but he's someone that's really stepped up now. Can you tell us a little bit about him?
Yeah, Ian's probably one of those guys that hasn't come through the underage system. Probably in the past may have been forgotten about, but I think we've been probably late in goal scoring. So we looked at Ian from that point of view. I watched all his club hockey there when we were able to watch it. And again, he's worked very hard in the regional sessions. He's taken his opportunity, and I think it reflects very well in Ian. Probably a lot of people have seen the media recently of the journey he's gone through in the last 2 years to get to where he has. So delighted for Ian, and I think it hopefully highlights the other players in the country that there is an opportunity there if you're playing well at club hockey.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's a different pathway anyway. And as you said, like, you know, for players that are maybe not in an underage setup as well, an underage system, that they can see that they can absolutely do it as well. And another one is Kevin O'Dea, who just did his leaving cert earlier this year.
Yes, Kevin's one of the only Munster player involved in the squad, and probably the first one to be involved in quite a substantial time. And I think that's something we need to fix. Kevin's a great young lad, mixes well within the group, and has done very well to come through to get his first caps in the tournament. Originally, he wasn't selected, but dealt with that selection very well. He's a hard-working midfielder, so I think, again, there's definitely talent in Munster. I could see more players in Munster coming through into the squad in the coming 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, because there are a few in the women's team, all right, with Naomi Carl, a Clare woman that we know so well. And gosh, her name has gone from me now, the other Limerick girl that I've spoken to so many times. It'll come back to me. Right, so you've had some retirees as well. Eugene McGee and Chris Cargo are gone, but there are some players that you are still not... Roisin Upton, there it is. Sorry about that. There are some as well that you aren't so sure of. So I know that, look, familiar names to everybody, Davy Hart, Connor Hart, Johnny Bell, Stephen Cole. Do you know yet what they are going to do?
Those guys have been missing for various reasons. One's getting married, a couple of others have had work commitments, there's been the odd injury within the group. So those guys at this moment in time to me are still part of the senior men's squad, and hopefully we'll be able to return in the near future.
So it's a bit of a watch this space and see what happens over the next little while. So just in the immediate future, so you do have a game coming up. Tell us about it.
Yes, we played Scotland tomorrow in the semi-final. We played Scotland six times recently, winning four of them. We drew one and we lost one. Some games between Ireland and Scotland are always very tight. Ireland probably got the better of a lot of friendlies that they've played in the last number of years, but when it comes to tournament hockey, Scotland probably has done okay in those. The Europeans in 2019 was a draw. So it'll be a difficult game. They have a few of the guys back involved. They obviously have Forsyth at the Olympics, so he comes back into their squad. He was missing for a while. Levandy Bull back in the back four, he was missing. So I expect it to be probably a tougher game tomorrow than it has been in any of the friendlies that we've played them in. But I would expect, I would hope that if we can produce a performance that we've enough to make the final.
Okay, well, Mark, it does sound like you do have an exciting young squad and plenty to look forward to. Thank you so much for taking our call and best of luck in that game against Scotland. Look forward to following your fortunes. Paul, we are going to look at the game now between Shamrock Rovers and Estonia. It did start to get a little bit better, but it didn't stay that way for long.
No, it didn't. Liam Scales equalised a super goal. Great ball from Graham Burke to the back post. And it was a lovely header looped over the Flora Tallinn goalkeeper on the 84th minute, but you know, they haven't played well tonight. You think get it to 3-2, get back to Tala and you're well within the tie. But 3 minutes later, they've conceded again. And it was Martin Miller from Flora Tallinn who's got a second of the night. But really poor defending from Sean Hoare. He's got beaten in a wide area. He was a pullback and it was an unbelievable finishing off the underside of the crossbar. But it's been a really entertaining watch, Marie, from a neutral's point of view, but I think Stephen Bradley will be really disappointed what he's seen tonight.
Yeah, and I think they're all going to be really disappointed as well, because there was so much expectation heading into this game, so much build up, and even the announcement about the game's been on television, the fact that there's going to be fans, a lot of fans there next week in Tala. Do you think the pressure has come too much for them?
It's hard to say. It's you wouldn't suggest pressure, because they have got good experience in their squad of playing in big games, but the performance levels have certainly dropped off based on what we've seen in the last number of weeks, and particularly in from a defensive point of view, and even in that midfield, I thought they've looked overrun at times, and they've looked stretched, and that would worry me going into the second leg. The Flora Tallinn will feel that there's more goals in it for them there. If they can produce something like we saw against Slovan Bratislava, you would say yes, they have a chance, but based on what we've seen tonight, they don't look like creating or producing a performance like that against this Flora Tallinn side.
So just in terms of the personnel that they have, and, you know, speaking to Graham Gartland about it last night, and the fact that they have strengthened their squad considerably over the last number of years. And look, Richie Towler's one player, and we've seen him close up there a few times on the screen, as someone that they brought in almost to try and help create more chances. And he was doing that. But tonight he seems to have been stifled.
Yeah, and, you know, just mentioning there, like I said, the midfield battle, I think they've been overrun. The majority of games are won and lost in that engine room. And tonight, Shamrock Rovers, who are a possession-based team, have lost that battle, and they haven't had good, solid possession for sustained periods of time. And Richie was poor tonight. Gary O'Neill, who I'm very close to, he's been poor tonight as well. Dylan Watts, Danny Mandrew, losing the ball in the wrong areas at the wrong time. And you can only do that so many times before getting punished. And if they are to get back in the tight, they're the type of battles, they're the type of performances that need to be seriously ramped up for next week. Because at a European level, when you cough up chances, you can see goals. And they've conceded four tonight. And if they are to produce anything like that next week, you'll see the same old story. But we've seen them produce well, in the last couple of weeks, if they can get back to those levels, they'll be there or thereabouts with a chance.
We saw Alan Manis there at the very end collecting the ball, had to make another save as well. And look, one worry that you'd have for them is that when they are asked questions like the ones that you've been pointed out, they don't have the answers for them, Paul. Do they not have a plan B?
Look, he brought on Aaron Green, and Aaron Green would suggest that you might go a little bit more direct and overhit the midfield and start to play in the final third and to pick up balls. And they did that at times tonight, but they didn't do it well enough. And when they got into the final third, they didn't show enough glimpses of quality to open up the Flora Tallinn defence, who, by the way, Marie, are very average at the back. You know, you can get at these and you can create chances and score goals, but tonight they haven't done that. And whether they have a plan B or not, their plan A has worked really well over the last number of weeks and months, and that should have been enough to at least stay within the tie tonight. I was surprised, and I mentioned it kind of early in the second half, I thought he should have brought on Chris McCann just to shore things up in the midfield and get more support in there for Gary O'Neill and maybe prevent two of those goals. And maybe that's something that he might look at next week, and maybe he'll look at Danny Mandrew, who came on and did relatively well to spice things up in the final third. But I always feel when you're two goals behind after the first leg, that leaves a very, very big gap to fill, and Flora Tallinn will certainly be sniffing more goals in that second leg.
Okay, we are going to turn our attention now to American sports, and I'm delighted to say that Jeff Shepherd is with us on the line. Shep, look, interesting times in America still from a COVID point of view. It's not going away, and a lot of the focus now seems to be on whether or not people in professional sports should or should not have to take the vaccine, with the trend being that they're going to have to take it if they want to keep their jobs.
Yeah, and look, Marie, I mean, it's, you know, sports, obviously, you know, some people are kind of getting highlighted for their stances. But I mean, really, this discussion is kind of going on across the business landscape in America. And I would assume eventually it's going to be, you know, around the world once you've got the ability to access the vaccine. But so, you know, you're starting to see some schools and even some professional teams start to announce, hey, look, we've reached the 100%, you know, vaccination threshold. And now we're starting to see some people who, for whatever reason, have decided they don't want to take the vaccine. You know, there's questions about whether or not they're going to be allowed back into the workforce and or to the workplace. And one of the big places this is cropping up right now is in college football. There's a coach out at Washington State, Nick Rolovich, who has so far not taken the vaccine. I believe he's the only coach in that conference. He was not invited to their Media Days event. You know, they kind of have that. That's like the unofficial start of the football season. And now the governor in the state of Washington has said, if you're a state employee, you need to get vaccinated to be able to return to your job. And he's the head coach at a public university, so he is technically a state employee. And so, you know, now this potentially, you know, is going to kind of lead to a showdown of, you know, what's he going to do? And so, you know, again, he didn't go to the conferences, you know, big press conference, but things have now changed with the governor making this mandate. So this is going to play out probably in the next month or so. And I don't think this is going to be the only situation where we see this. The NFL has basically come out and said, you know, if you don't get vaccinated, you're not going to get any exemptions. We're not forfeiting. We're not moving games. If you have players that are unvaccinated, they're going to have to travel separately from the team. I mean, there's a whole host of issues. And there have been some very vocal, you know, anti-vaccine players in the NFL that so far they're still in training camp, but it remains to be seen if they're going to, you know, be on final rosters.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting space, and as you said, like one that is going to come into a lot more focus over the next few months as well. And look, just speaking of the NFL, Tim Tebow cut by the Jaguars this week.
Yeah, he was. You know, we talked about it, you know, when he got signed, about trying to, you know, make a position change from, I mean, really technically a sport change, because he went from quarterback to then trying to play outfield in the minor league in the New York Mets organization, then back to football to play tight end for the Jaguars. And he started at camp, and he was one of four or five tight ends on the roster. And they just had their first preseason game last week, and he didn't really contribute offensively. But the big glaring thing was, you know, he didn't really do much on special teams as well, and he's kind of been getting roasted for an attempted block on a kick, and it just didn't go well. And look, I mean, if you're, you know, not going to be, you know, either the top one or two tight ends on a roster, you have to be able to play on special teams. I mean, that's the only way you'll be able to make contributions normally in a game. And if you're struggling with that, you know, you're really not, they're not going to have a space for you on the roster. I'm kind of surprised it happened on the first cut, but it didn't sound like he was, you know, having the impact that he was hoping to have. And, he, you know, his former college coach, Urban Meyer, had to let him go.
Okay, Jeff Shepherd, thank you so much. And just very quickly before we wrap up, that baseball game we mentioned last week, Field of Dreams, was the most watched Major League Baseball game in 16 years. Pretty phenomenal. We'll chat about that next week. We're going to take a very quick break.
Two FM. Game on 2FM.
Now, Shamrock Rovers' Europa Conference League playoff against Flora Tallinn has not gone to plan. They have lost 4-2. Tony O'Donoghue is with us. Tony, look, it was a disappointing result, but more so, the performance really, really was surprising.
It was a bonkers game, I thought, I have to say. It was really open, much more open than Shamrock Rovers would have liked if they had managed, when they got it back before half-time to 2-1, to bring that scoreline back to Tallinn next week. I think they'd have been happy enough with that. But, you know, so sloppy, the lack of composure from Rovers. The defence seemed to be so out of sorts, maybe all because Lee Grace was missing. I'm not sure. Hopefully he'll be back next Thursday, but they have to have a number of players looking at themselves as well. Joey O'Brien had a poor game. Sean Hoare made a mistake for the last one. And Lee Scales got a great goal near the end. You'd have to hope that he is available and hasn't gone to Celtic by next week. I'm sure he will play in the second leg. But Stephen Bradley's going to have to look at maybe the likes of Sean Gannon coming into the side, or I heard Paul mention there that maybe it would have been a good idea to bring Chris McCann in and his experience. But, you know, such a strange performance from Rovers. They did manage to score, but now they're going to have to score and win by 3 goals next Thursday in Tallaght, or get it to penalties and win by 2.
Yeah, tough week ahead for them as they try to regroup. Tony O'Donoghue, thank you so much for joining us. Paul Corrie, thank you for coming into studio. We'll be back tomorrow. Tara Stewart is up next.
Live across the nation, this is RTE 2FM.